Hey everybody, Mark Ashton here, coming at you with the March 14th edition of Project 4-4, where we're reading through the Bible in a year. And today you read Joshua 18, 19, 20, and 21. In these chapters, the tribal allotments are given. The land is doled out to all of the Israelites. Now, it's interesting to note that the 2.5 tribes on the other side of the Jordan, they've already got their allotment, and so that doesn't need to be doled out. On the west side of the Jordan, 2 tribes have their allotment and 7 tribes don't. The 2 tribes that do have their allotment are Ephraim and Judah. And I don't know about you, but I wonder, how come Ephraim and Judah get their allotment and everyone else has to draw lots for theirs? Well, it turns out, of course, that Joshua is from the tribe of Ephraim and Caleb is from the tribe of Judah. And way back 40 years ago, when they decided that they were going to go in and take over this land and they voted yes, God said, I'm going to give you your allotments in advance. And so God promised them their certain allotments, and Joshua got his, or the tribe of Ephraim got Joshua's, and Joshua one city within that. And Judah got their allotment that Caleb had earned, and Caleb got one city within that. But for the rest of the land of Judah, they were still trying to figure out who gets which slice of land. So they sent out 21 surveyors, 3 from each of the 7 tribes, to go throughout the land of Israel, figure out what an equal allotment would be in 7 different places in the land that they had just taken over. Once they decided that, they all go back to Shiloh, where the Ark of the Covenant and the Tabernacle and Joshua all are, and before the Lord they draw lots for these different territories. Now, that's very fascinating to me, that they would put their future in the hands of drawing names out of a hat for different allotments. But when they did it under the hand of God, and so they trusted God's sovereignty to get them each tribe in the land that they deserve the most. And so God oversaw that particular allotment. Well, Joshua chapter 20 and 21 take us on a different track. Because in chapter 20 and 21, we see the tribe of Levi, and they don't get an allotment of land, because remember, their inheritance isn't land, it's the Lord. They're the smallest of the tribes, and they're to serve him day and night forever. So instead, they get 38 cities that are distributed throughout the entirety of the rest of the 11 tribes, or 10 and 2 half tribes, actually is a better way to say that. They get cities divided throughout that. Now, 6 of these cities in particular are worth noting, because they're called the cities of refuge. Now, the cities of refuge are cities that are named for a particular purpose, and we'll see them showing up in the narrative of the Old Testament and New Testament a little bit later. But one city I want you to watch out for in particular is a city called Hebron, or Kiriath Arba in this case. And this city of Hebron will play a major role later on when David is becoming king. It becomes his headquarters before he goes to Jerusalem. And it's just interesting that this is one of those sacred, set-aside cities of refuge. Now, the very existence of these cities alerts us to a number of things about Israel. The first thing is that it shows us how precious Israel considered a human life to be. All the way back in the book of Genesis, it was explained to us by God that because man is made in the image of God, the penalty for murder is death. That you'll remember, was a part of God's covenant with Noah. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. Genesis 9:6. Now, the burden of executing the sentence of murder against a murderer seems to have fallen from the earliest days onward upon the nearest relative of a victim. In fact, upon the closest male relative who is designated in our text as the avenger of blood. That's a very ominous sounding term, and to be honest, it's a very ominous kind of a role that this person plays. The responsibility it carries is heavy. The avenger of blood could not rest until the murder of the family member had been avenged. Well, for the perpetrator of intentional murder, there could never be rest, there could never be safety from the time of the crime until the day of his death. Always he must run, knowing that somewhere out there the avenger of blood was seeking justice and retribution. For intentional murder, just as for the larger category of intentional sin, as we saw in the book of Leviticus and Numbers, there was no provision of forgiveness or pardon. But if it wasn't murder, but manslaughter, an unpremeditated, accidental taking of human life, then the city of refuge became the haven. No admission could be given until the person had convinced the elders of that city of his innocence in this matter. So as quickly as possible, the offending party must get themselves to the gate of the nearest city of refuge. If he succeeded in making his case before the elders, he would be admitted. If he didn't make a case, he would not be admitted. If he did make his case, he could stay in the city forever and never face the vengeance of the family member. He couldn't leave without incurring all of the liability of his manslaughter until the death of the high priest serving when that incident occurred. His home and his fields, his family, his friends, all would be forfeit. His employment would be gone. So this demonstrates even how serious manslaughter, accidental killing, would be, but the man's life itself would not be forfeit. The value of human life was thus established in Israel as a very high marker. Though the one guilty of manslaughter might continue to live, he was paying a high price for his folly or carelessness. The murderer's life was forfeit, and the very existence of the cities kept the society from falling into a state of anarchy over a perpetual Hatfield and McCoy-like blood feud. Well, what does this city of refuge remind you of? My hope is that it reminds you of Jesus. Check out these characteristics. These cities were established by God long before they were needed. Much like the death of Jesus was established as our forgiveness long before we needed it. They were available to all as well as accessible to all, just like the death of Jesus. Their gates were always open, just like the arms of Jesus. They were widely advertised, just like the power of Jesus is when things are happening well. All the cities of refuge were prominently located in high elevation so they could be seen from great distances. And if we're doing our job well in proclaiming Jesus, the same will be true of us. Whoever needed to flee to one of these cities was free to do so, whether he was an Israelite or a Gentile. And today, everybody is welcome in the family of God, whether they are an Israelite or a Gentile. Aren't you glad that Jesus is our city of refuge? Aren't you glad that God was thinking ahead for us? Aren't you glad that he is our refuge in time of trouble? This is Mark Ashton, wishing you a great refuge in Christ this day.